Hey guys, welcome to another reoccurring episode on TOT the podcast. This is going to be our Q&A. It's going to be popping up here and there. We've had some people throw in some questions and we're going to be answering them one by one. Do you, Tristan, feel that groundwork is now more accepted and more dressage riders understand the benefits? Or do you feel there's still a long way to go? Yeah, I mean, it's there's always a long way to go. I mean, there's not 10 lifetimes is not enough to progress to a level that we really understand anything really deep about life, ourselves, and, of course, our horses. But I remember a time when I first came to Europe, and, of course, I come from Australia being a different culture, a different background. We don't have a riding education. We don't learn a technical aspect of riding. We have using horses and often the one off the track or, you know, we get a horse that ends up with us and we make good use of it because we don't turn around and there's a breeder on the corner that's breeding purpose-bred dressage horses or jumping horses and he has a whole field of them. So this is, I think, why we have very talented jumping, eventing riders and good horsemanship. And because of using horses, you know, working with cattle and on the farm and the sort of historical thing that comes with horses in Australia. But it's, because we don't have that sort of aspect in Europe of learning to be on a riding horse, go to the riding school, learning a technical aspect of riding. You know, you go there and you learn what to do to get the horse to do what you want. You put the leg on to get him to trot. You have to learn to sit straight. You're learning a technical aspect of riding. And because of those two things, you come at it at a different, from a different perspective. In Europe, you're straight away sort of drawn into looking at accolades and goals and especially now, you know, the young kids go to a riding school, they get hooked, the parents have to buy a pony, they start to have to buy, you know, the expensive stuff, the boots, the cap, you know. The father feels that he's now a pony dad and he's drawn in and the only joy he can get is maybe if he's got the funds, he can buy a big horse truck and be proud of that and something to polish. And maybe you also enjoy a bit of the sport along the way, but it's very much drawn into sort of going in the direction of accolades and sport. You know, kids want to get on the team. They want to go to the Europeans and that's sort of the direction. And it's all about riding, of course. And, you know, the horsemanship culture in Australia and using horses is, yeah, you're teaching the horses and you're getting off the horses to go through a gate and you're leading them and they have to lead to go over the bridge and they have to, you know, that sort of culture is already there from the beginning. And coming to Europe, of course, having that background and those skills and, you know, early on from my grandfather telling stories about buying horses from the gypsies in the UK and, you know, sitting in the field and the whole day and waiting till the horse comes to him and the horse put his head in his lap and he's patting and putting the halter on and, you know, as a young boy feeling that my grandfather stood there the whole day and then he finally caught the horse. And Granddad was very good at not letting the truth get in the way of a good story, which all my aunties and relatives will say. But it installed something in me that sort of said there was an importance in being able to listen and there was something special about being able to talk in a way to the horses. And so that was sort of installed in me as a young age and then that drew me towards, you know, that presented me with horsemen and different people that could do something good with horses. And I wanted to absorb something useful from anybody and anyone that could do something good with horses that was not discipline-based. So that led me to, you know, circus guys, horsemanship guys. We have, you know, great horsemanship guys in Australia. We have, you know, the cattle disciplines, cutting horses, reining, stock horses. And so you're exposed to a lot more different horse sports in that way that derives from a using horse. And so when, of course, you are coming to Europe, then, yeah, I have a horsemanship background. And my influence from Morten when I first came to Denmark is he also has this brilliant sort of inquisitive mind. He has this healthy, unhealthy addiction, like most of us, to finding out what you can teach a horse. To be able to teach a horse was something really important to him. And he had a great influence in the beginning. When I first came to Moreton in the end of 1999, early 2000, and that opened my eyes again to, you know, a lot of the other trainers, circus trainers, for instance, and people teaching things to horses that you didn't even know was possible. So then coming to Europe with that and that, and wanting to be a good horseman first, wanting to understand the horse and be able to teach the horse something and understand what that process was and what the learning theory was to be able to communicate with the horse. And then coming into the sport, you know, I was really all the time looking at how I can build a bridge between horsemanship and sport, because I knew, or to my knowledge, before internet was also huge, you're not exposed to a lot of guys. You know, back in Australia, I would finally got internet just before I left Australia, and I would load a YouTube video and I could go and ride five horses while it was buffering and come back and watch 30 seconds of some, you know, some guy in the US giving a clinic or working a horse. So, of course, it's different these days. You're exposed to much more things through the internet, and where it's gone is, you know, mind-boggling. But in that time, yeah, I sort of came to Europe, and then you're bringing with you your skills and trying to build that bridge between horsemanship and sport. And to my knowledge, there wasn't a lot of guys doing that, or definitely in the circles that I was traveling in. And, you know, you go and you start groundwork and nobody had a clue what you were doing. You know, when we first started touching horses with a stick with a bag on the end, they thought you were nuts. You know, going and giving clinics and covering horses in plastic, laying horses down on plastic, cracking stock whips. You know, we did it, Will and I, Will Rogers, we did a clinic in Herning in Denmark at the Stallion Show. We were, did a fire act, and we were riding dressage horses with chainsaws, you know, purely for the wow factor. But to also sort of break the ice between, this is how a horse learns. This is what is going to give him the feeling of comfort. This is the extra thing that the horses can learn to really grow and progress in the dressage sport, because we were surrounded by people with only focusing on the technical aspect, riding the exercises every day. And we were seeing horses blow up and finding it more and more difficult to manage the environments they were being put into. So we were thinking, this is the link. We have to really, you know, teach people this, that people, you know, the horses need to learn. It doesn't matter. You can practice and get 10 for the Piaf. And if you go there and he's scared of the pot plant, your 10 turns into a 2, you know. So from the beginning, we felt, you know, we were passionate about, this is the thing that, you know, this is the key. This is the source to the secret to horses, which of course there isn't one, but that was sort of our drive at that time. And then we would go and, I was going to international shows with my wife, Katja, now all going to all the big international shows. She was on the team, and I would walk into the main arena and I would go to do a familiarization, and everybody was riding, doing extended trots and looking like riding the Grand Prix twice through. And I was going in the halter, and in the beginning it wasn't allowed. You know, stewards would stop me and say, no, you can't either not at all come in, or you had to have a bridle on, because, you know, you've got control when you had a bit in the mouth. Or it was to stop people putting a halter on and walking in that didn't obviously have control. But there was some regulation on that. And then I started to get clinics and demos maybe in the warm-up paddock. You know, for instance, in the Brabant, I was giving clinics in the paddock, which is like the 10-minute box before going in to the main arena. And, of course, the stewards would be often still standing on those rings. The clinic would be maybe in between a class or in the break or before or something. And stewards start to see what was going on, what I was talking about in the clinics and explaining about teaching the horses what it is in their physiology and what they should feel and to be a master of themselves and have that good self-management when going into the ring, and to teach them how to be in control of themselves in those environments. and what the process was, what I was doing. There's many situations where I'd go to the competitions, international dressage shows, and, you know, I'd see corner of the eye someone to go up and talk to the steward, and the steward would come over and goes, please, can you stop what you're doing? And I was thinking, well, if you can tell me what I'm doing, then I will stop doing it. And, of course, there wasn't anything in the rules to say I was that I was not allowed to do that. But because it was foreign and different, people start to be suspicious and not want to see it, or because it's different, we shouldn't do it, we should do what everyone else does. And so it was weird. And you know, over time, stewards would see me come in and then sort of go, oh, okay, Tristan, you know, come, just give me the sign that I would go in. And then eventually I was doing the full preparation in a halter. I would walk on the outside, you know, and I was always conscious of the other riders, and that there was a possibility that even me walking a horse in hand would create their horses in the familiarization to be tense. So I was always aware of how I was affecting other riders because I was maybe doing something different and weird. You know, a lot of the riders or grooms used to joke. Alan Davies from Charlotte would always say, oh, here he is. He still says it to this day. Oh, you're here doing your voodoo again. You know, so the perspective of what I was doing was weird. And, of course, Alan has got a great deal of horsemanship, and Carl and Charlotte, of course, as well. So it is, of course, a running joke, but it is evidence of the thought. And yeah, as it started to go along, you know, I would take the horses in and really teach them the physical sensation in the body, in the space in which they had to perform. Thriller at that time, the horse that Kutcher was riding, was very eccentric and could be triggered by random things. And if we didn't do our homework and we didn't prepare him right for the environment he was about to go in, he would pull our pants down every time. And you know, I would take him in and I would go through the first diagonal if it allowed me to. If there was not a whole lot of riders and I could get in the ring, I would go in the ring or just around the outside, get him to follow my body language, going forward, going back. I would turn him onto the first diagonal, get him to lower the heart rate, to breathe out, to look at the line and feel the sense of how his body felt and that he was in control in this space, in the vision, in the sight of what he was about to see on his first diagonal in the Grand Prix, trying to prepare them for these things, giving the horses some kind of visual training that they could also prepare themselves, that they felt in their mind that they actually had already done it. They've already been in the ring and they've already experienced it and they felt empowered by it. And, of course, it was even what I was doing, walking in a rope halter, was weird. And, of course, things grow and progress, and then there's, you know, now social media and everybody sees things and everybody gets a different influx of ideas. And there's then more and more people started to come and be leading their horses into the arena with the fluffy halter on and standing and letting the horse stare at the judge's box, even though sometimes they would stare until they would get nervous and then think, oh, shit, we better take him away from there. But it was to be tried. It was now open the door to make it a possibility to try these things, and maybe it's good to get your horse used to something, give him time to look. And people were trying things to get their horses to be more comfortable. And it's, I don't know, it's like anything. And I think people have to have the horses and the situation and the circumstance that pushes them to look for different ways of doing things. And, you know, some people, especially in the dressage sport, are so much on this fast track of being successful, getting the next good horse, being in the sport. And what are the elements to be good in the sport? You have to have a good horse. You have to have good sponsors to be able to fund the continuation of having good horses. And, you know, if that horse is not going to cut it, you know, if you're trying to get into the top 5, 10, 3 in the world, you've got to have a horse with a certain, you know, list of talents, and he has to have the right disposition, you know, to be performing in the right way. And of course they try to avoid horses that are going to give undesired behaviors and things we don't want, or is going to stop the fast track of being on the scene and being competitive at a top international sport. But so I think it's still, you know, avenues where it takes that horse. And quite often people have an idea, you know, in what they want to do with the horse, and they buy with this idea and this vision and this ambition, and then the horse is a little bit difficult or it doesn't go in that way, and they think it's a total disaster, you know, that it is now, it's not following the idea of what we wanted. But for my feeling, that is the gift. You know, if they are lucky enough to have a horse that challenges them, pushes them outside of their norm into a space of real growth and knowledge and development and awareness of yourself, what don't I know? What do I need to learn to be able to help this horse to be better? How do I turn this around, this situation, so we can start to do the things we plan to do, follow the ambition? You know, that is the real gift, if you're lucky enough to have a horse like that. And those that are sort of willing to stick with it or have no choice to stick with it, they start to look somewhere else. They often come to starting from the beginning, the groundwork, understanding, looking at their horses. Who is my horse? What is he thinking? What are the skills he doesn't have? What are causing the undesired behaviors? And then I think a majority of people are coming to the groundwork and different ideas. And of course, not everything relies in the groundwork. There's just where I feel the communication and the conversation, the connection, relationship starts the best for me. So I think, yeah, the best thing is that, you know, the internet, you know, and especially in our sport, there's a lot of bad things that go on the internet, and people criticize a lot of people, and maybe they're not in a position to do it, but it's definitely in some ways made some positive change in our sport, that people have to self-reflect and go, oh, what are we actually doing here? You know, check your moral boundaries and your ethical standards, and what are we actually doing here? And I think the sport has changed a lot because of that. Although there's a lot of personal damage that can be done along the way, in general, you know, there's a lot of people changing and looking for new ideas. But yeah, like I said in the beginning, it still can take 10 lifetimes to sort of, for people to have enough time to grow and learn and develop and progress and get good enough that we're worthy of continuing to have horses in our lives.